Okay, I'm here today with Lynn Soppy, and I will interview him about the 1964 earthquake and tsunami that hit Alaska. I guess my first question would be, where are you from?
Well, I was born and raised in Iowa on a farm, and grew up there, went to school stateside, went to the Air Force, and then I've spent part of my Air Force time in Alaska. And I've been here ever since. A total of about 43 years now in Alaska, 37 in Kodiak. Wow.
And did you live any other place in Alaska besides
yes,
Kodiak?
Yes, I did. I spent some time in Anchorage, several years altogether. And then a few months at King Salmon, a few months at a place called Calicut Creek up in the interior, a few months on St. Lawrence Island, and about 2 years in Bethel, almost 2 years in Bethel, and then 37 years in Kodiak.
Mm-hmm. What brought you here to Kodiak?
Well, I worked for the White Owls Communication System when I was in Calicut Creek and in Bethel. But I had come here first in 1957 for a few months, a temporary assignment on that project, and it was so nice here that summer that I couldn't forget Kodiak, and I kept trying to get back here, but there were no openings for a long time. And finally, in 1959, there was an opening, and I made a bid on it, and I got it. And it happened that I got a transfer here the same, or 1 week before I was planning to get married to my wife, whom I'd met in West Seattle when she was working public health nurse. So I transferred here, stayed 2 days, made a few temporary arrangements, and went to Seattle, and we got married, went on a honeymoon, and we came back here. We've been here ever since.
Wow. So during the time of the earthquake, where were you at?
We were living in a house that we had bought a few years before up on the side of Pillar Mountain. The address up there was number 5. Hillcrest, but there was no street there. It was just a convenience address, I guess. There were 3 houses that lay up on the topmost layer of houses, and we lived in the middle one. One of them has since gone. It slid down the mountain in mudslides a couple years ago. But there are still 2 of them there, and we lived in one of them for 11 years, and we were there during the earthquake and tidal waves. That was about, I think they said it was about 220 feet above sea level.
Mm-hmm.
So we were safe when the tsunamis came.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a front row seat to watch the whole thing.
So you were at home at the time?
Yes.
This happened?
I just got off work, and then I had a day off the next day. And it was in the evening. We just finished our dinner. And I was taking a cup of coffee into the living room to turn on the TV and watch the news, and the thing struck, the earthquake hit, and we grabbed our 2 little kids. At that time we just had 2 little kids, one about 3 years old and one just a year old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran out of the house, and then by that time the earthquake was so violent that we couldn't go anyplace. We did get out of the house and down and below it and on a little tiny flat lawn we had out front, but then we couldn't go any farther. We couldn't even stand up for a while, hanging mm-hmm. on to each other and hanging on to the kids, and we watched the ground along the mountainside there. It was just heaving like the waves on the ocean, like 2 or 3 foot waves.
Mm-hmm.
It was scary, and like I said, we couldn't stand up on our own. We had to hang mm-hmm. on to something. Then we were afraid the house would come down on top of us because we were directly in front of it and below it. And then it was so violent, we thought maybe the side of the mountain would slide down, mm-hmm. some, you know, the overburden and rocks and stuff. But it didn't, apparently. It was just dry enough to hold in place.
So there was no rain at all?
No, the day had been a fairly nice day. It was partly cloudy, but we had some sun that day, and it was pleasant, calm, and and it was in March, late March, 27th. Happened to be Good Friday. And 5:36 in the evening, I think it was, mm-hmm. the thing hit, earthquake, the first one, the big one.
The big one. So were there several after that, or?
Yes, there were. There were at least two fairly big ones later in the night. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the times of those, but it seems to me that a couple of hours after the first one, we had another pretty wild, violent one. And then somewhat later that night, maybe 5, 6, 7 hours later, early the next morning or something, we had another one. Mm-hmm. But they were nothing like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The first one at the time, or soon after, they reported it was a 8.3 on the Richter scale on a scale of 10.
Mm-hmm.
But then they later revised that when they started getting reports in from all over the south central part of Alaska to an 8.6. And then recently, just within the last year or two, a couple of years, I read the scientific reports on how they have revised that again.
Mm-hmm.
And now they call it a 9.2.
Wow.
Which is extremely violent. The most violent one ever to hit North America, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
It's ever been recorded, anyway.
Jeez.
And it probably was partly because it was so violent and so big an area. This is something, an area all the way from Yakutat to in the east to King Salmon in the west.
Mm-hmm.
And north to south, it was like from halfway to Fairbanks. I don't know what, Trapper's Creek or someplace up in that area. They felt it, Talkeetna area.
Mm-hmm.
And then down here to the south in Chignik. So it covered an immense area.
Wow. So whereabouts was the epicenter of it?
The epicenter was up in upper Prince William Sound,
mm-hmm.
Not far from the town of Valdez, and near the Columbia Glacier, if you know that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it also happens to be just a few miles from the site of the, 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill,
oh, wow.
Which was at Bly Reef, just, I think, 5 or 7 miles to the east of the quake epicenter.
Amazing. So, did it cause a lot of damage here in Kodiak?
Well, it caused damage to the breakwaters around the small boat harbor, but they were much smaller than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
The rock riprap, they call it, that they had built the breakwaters with, was mostly much smaller rocks and boulders than they used when they rebuilt it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in the same location, and the earthquake was so violent it shook them apart, so that after it was over, only about a half or a third of each breakwater still showed above the water.
Oh, wow.
The rest of it was just scattered underwater someplace. And so later, what was left of the breakwaters didn't afford a whole lot of protection against storms,
mm-hmm.
when they occurred, until it was rebuilt a couple, 3 years later. But and then there was a few buildings around town in those days that were made of concrete block. And I think there were some houses that had brick chimneys or concrete block chimneys for their fireplaces or whatever, and those were damaged,
mm-hmm.
some of them. And any building that sat on concrete foundations, not all of them, but I think that they were subject to some damage from the quake, mm-hmm. itself.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the buildings in those days, even downtown, were wood frame buildings. And many of them, including our house and a lot of other houses around town, sat on not concrete footings, but on pilings,
mm-hmm.
Set down in the ground to bedrock, and then the house sitting on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the earthquake hit, even though it was so violent, those houses mostly just bobbed on the surface like corpse or something, and many of them were not damaged. Our house wasn't mm-hmm. damaged. Things fell out of the cupboards and glasses and dishes and bottles of stuff, and everything fell out of the cabinets and broke mm-hmm. all over the floor. TVs fell over, the refrigerator fell over, but it leaned against a breakfast counter. But it was a new one, and then it got a dent in the front mm-hmm. of it when it fell over. Things like that, but the structure itself was not too badly damaged.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem in our house, and I think a lot of houses, was that after the quake, we had a lot of trouble opening and closing windows and doors that mm-hmm. used to fit and work just right. Then they would catch and rub. They couldn't be closed, or they couldn't be opened.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I used to live in that house, as a matter of fact, the same house. Last year, we rented it for the school year. So we did talk to your wife about it, and she said, yeah, we were up here at the time of the earthquake, so I can imagine the view that you had of everything and how scary it must have been way up on that hill, too.
Yes. After the earthquake scare, when we thought the mountain would slide down on top of us, then it was a good place to be up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were way high above the water.
That's good.
So when the tsunamis came in, then we were safe enough up there.
Mm-hmm. So when the tsunami hit, how long was it after? How long did it hit after the earthquake hit?
I think it was 33 minutes. It was the earthquake, the first one occurred at 5:36 in the evening, and it seems to me that it was 5 or 6 minutes after 6 when the first tsunami hit
mm-hmm.
here. The epicenter was, like I say, in Upper Prince William Sound, and that's about 320 or 350 air miles northeast of here.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while for the water motion to
mm-hmm.
reach here. It's a good thing it did take that long, because if it had been a shorter time, I think there would have been a much greater loss of life here
mm-hmm.
on the island.
So people were warned about the tsunami?
Well, after a quake that violent, and if you live along the coast,
mm-hmm.
you could expect that there might be a tsunami. We didn't know that there would be,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people were aware that it could happen. And the
mm-hmm.
people who were down in the low-lying areas, most of them ran away and got to higher ground.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them started climbing up the side of Pillar Mountain, and they went right on past our house and right up the side. A lot of others got in cars and drove up the road to on the back side of Pillar Mountain to
mm-hmm.
get to higher ground. Others went to places in town that were a little higher than along the shore.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were a lot of other people who were downtown shopping or in the restaurants and bars, stores, and the business people themselves. That's a low-lying area. And,
mm-hmm.
and the troopers and the police, and then soon after that, the shore patrol from the Navy base tried to evacuate everybody from the low-lying areas.
Okay.
And they had the sirens going and warning people and chasing them out of there. But a lot of people also wanted to get their boats out of the small boat harbor
mm-hmm.
because they thought if there was a tsunami coming, they would be able to save their boat if they could get it out of the harbor and
mm-hmm.
Out to open water.
And were the troopers letting them do that?
Pretty much, but
mm-hmm.
for a while anyway. But I think that everybody was pretty afraid that there would be a tsunami,
mm-hmm.
or could be. And so, but before the troopers could get organized to evacuate everybody, a lot of the people ran down there to the boat harbor to get
mm-hmm.
their boats out. And many of them did,
mm-hmm.
but some didn't, and that's why we had considerable losses of life here in Kodiak.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't from the earthquake. I don't think anybody was killed or injured in the earthquake itself
mm-hmm.
that I know of, but there were a number who lost their lives in the first tsunami.
Mm-hmm. So it was still daylight when the tidal wave hit?
It was daylight. It was getting evening, and it was partly cloudy. And I took a camera and I tried to take some pictures, but the light was poor. And in those days, the film wasn't nearly as good as it is,
mm-hmm.
especially for 35mm slides.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have pretty good light for that. So most of them didn't turn out real well, but I kept them as a kind of a
memento
anyway.
So did you see the tidal wave actually come in?
Yes. Yes, we had.
What did you feel at that moment?
Well, it was pretty awesome, pretty spectacular, scary. And I could, when I first realized something was happening was after we had got back in the house, 10 minutes, 15 minutes after the first quake, and tried to start straightening things up a little bit. I stepped out on the little overhang front deck in front of the house and was watching all the activity downtown and below us. And I glanced over at the far end of Woody Island. And we'd been up around the islands with our boat many times, so I knew what I was looking at. And I saw this spray from the breakers hitting the point over the far northwest corner of Woody Island. And it startled me because the spray was considerably higher than the bluff there. And I knew the bluff was a fairly high one right at that point. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, so I yelled at my wife, who was inside, and a neighbor lady had come over. And they were trying to warm up some dinner on an oil-fired range we had in the kitchen. And I got that lighted again, and boy, it was the only heat we had. And so they were busy, and I yelled at them. And I said, maybe there's a tsunami coming. All right, we call it a tidal wave, which isn't accurate, but... So they came running out and watched it, and by the time they got on out on the front deck, it had come down the channel, and very high water. It made the channel look like a, kind of like a river that was running at a running downhill.
Oh, jeez!
And it swept down the channel and took everything along the channel with it, buildings and stores and canneries and everything. Just ripped them all out, and then it. When it got down, the high water reached the opening of the boat harbor. A lot of the water swirled right into the boat harbor. And all of the boats and the piers, docks, floating docks and everything that were in there, all the boats that were still in there, they all got ripped out by the force of the water and pushed up into the town.
Oh, gosh.
And that was when the real scary part started.
Mm-hmm.
Watching that, it was total destruction. Just everything just went.
And how about the noise?
It was never heard a noise like that before. Everything cracking, breaking wood, and everything, and very noisy. Everything just like a bulldozer running over your house or something while you're in it.
Oh,
it was something. And then, like I said, ripped all the. Every structure and boat and things out of the boat harbor, pushed it all up into the lower town area, the downtown itself. And the water washed in as far up as the intersection by McDonald's and up between McDonald's and the village market and the police station, that area. It was about as high as the water got there. But then, of course, other low-lying areas, too, are like that. And some of the biggest, heaviest boats, fishing boats and big old scows and things that got pushed into town, they got left there when the water receded because they didn't move as fast.
Oh, okay.
Even though the water washed out fairly fast and took a lot of boats and buildings with it, some of the biggest ones were left in town. And one of them, biggest one of all in those days here was a big old boat called the Salif. And it had got washed up to, I think it's Peking Restaurant, up in where Dr. Guy's office is, about where his building is. And the thing stayed there on the side of the hill. Just above that, where that big apartment building is, the west end of southwest end of it, where that is now, the old school used to be there. And and then down the slope just below the school, or about where Dr. Guy's place is now, there was the old sleeve sitting up there.
Oh, gosh.
And it was loaded with the crab. They hadn't got it unloaded.
Mm-hmm. Oh, loaded with crab. So yeah. What happened with the crab?
They rotted. And that was one of the urgent things to be done when they got bulldozers in, is to clear some sort of a pathway down the street, and so they could push some of these old boats back into mm-hmm. water. And they had to get rid of that crab, because it was, when it warmed up a little bit, it would be so stenchy and terrible. Probably wouldn't be able to breathe.
Yeah.
I don't know that I ever did learn what they did with it, whether they unloaded it first and then took it away and dumped mm-hmm. it someplace. They must have, because it was some time before they got the boat back mm-hmm. in the water. Quite a long time.
About how much crab was that?
I think they said 4,000 king crabs. But maybe it was 4,000 pounds. But mm-hmm. I think it was 4,000 king crabs. Quite a few.
That's a lot.
A shame to waste all that good king crab.
Can you imagine? That. Oh, boy.
And there were some other boats left up in the town, scattered all over. There were several small pleasure boats, mostly, that and skiffs that got washed up behind the old Donnelly building, which is now the Canna building.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be the post office.
Oh,
the boat,
okay.
And behind that, between that and the bowling alley and the Elks building, for some reason, a bunch of small boats got pushed in there, and the boat I used to own was one of them.
Oh, no.
And it sat up there for the next few months.
So was it damaged?
Yes, but I had sold it shortly before that. But it was damaged, and apparently he never fixed it up, because I never saw it again after they cleared out the downtown. But I think it was probably damaged beyond repair or something.
Mm-hmm.
And several other large fishing boats were sitting around town for a long time afterward. Two or three of them down there at about where the Harbor Master building is now, and the NBA Bank,
mm-hmm.
along the harbor waterfront there. There were a lot of downtown buildings and stores and things too that got washed away when the water went out again.
Mm-hmm.
And some cars that were parked down there along the near where the Harbor Master building is, across from NBA and the
mm-hmm.
Mecca.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kind of a parking lot there, and quite a few cars that people had not been able to get out of there in time. They were lost too, washed out to sea. Yeah, it was, and it lasted a while. I think probably it was, I would guess between 7 and 10 minutes from the time the water washed clear into town to mm-hmm. its maximum level until it went back out.
Wow.
And all that time was a horrendous grinding noise and cracking and smashing.
Just moving everything and taking it with it. Were you separated from any loved ones or friends during that time?
Well, of course, my immediate family, this is two brothers and their families, and at that time, one of them lived in Anchorage, and the other lived stateside in Seattle, or Redmond,
mm-hmm.
at that time, and then, of course, I have aunts and uncles and cousins back in the Midwest, but the communications were out, and so they were quite concerned when they heard mm-hmm. that I heard about the Alaska earthquake, and especially when some of the news reports, some of the first ones, indicated that the island of Kodiak sank.
Oh my gosh.
Some of Gretchen's relatives in Europe and some other friends of ours in Norway heard it on European broadcasts that Kodiak Island had sunk.
Oh,
they didn't know what that meant, you know. I guess they imagined that the whole damn island just went under the water, but it did.
Put people in a panic.
Yeah, some people were very concerned. And then, like I say, we couldn't communicate with them for some time.
There was no way. So the power immediately went out.
Yes, and then they worked very hard and fast to restore it when they could, but it took, I think it was a couple of days before they had any power restored. And up where we live, for some reason, that was the last section to get any power restored. And that was, I believe it was on the fifth day that we got power up there again.
So you mentioned earlier that you had a stove. Did this put off any heat for you?
Yes.
Was that your only source of heat?
Yes, it was. And it was the only source of heat for anybody on that whole slope, that whole hillside. It was an old-fashioned kitchen range with a flat cast iron top, you know, and those sort of round lids, and it was oil-fired. But the fuel was kept in a barrel up behind the house, and it was gravity feed to the stove. It just went downhill into the stove.
Okay.
We didn't have to use any electrical pumps or anything, like our furnace and things. So the furnace was useless for heat. But I got the kitchen range going again not too long after the quake. I had to take the line apart and blow it out because some crud had got shaken up and got in there and plugged it up. So I had to take it apart and blow through it and clean that junk out of it.
I
put it back together and we got a fire going in that old range. And then it turned out that that was the only heat or cooking facility that was usable up there. So our neighbors on both sides, my wife invited them to come over and cook their dinners, brings pans of vegetables or whatever, soup and this and that, for their dinner, come over and put them on our stove. They wanted to cook them. They did that for several days. We were lucky in the matter of water, too, because a couple hundred feet from our house in the side of the mountain, there was a spring. We had occasionally used water from there before, just if there was any problem with the utility. And so we ran over there and got jugs and buckets and things and got our water from there, and so did several of the other neighbors. It was just a little spring, but it was enough to furnish water for whoever wanted to pack it away. And that was very good water, too. It came from a deep underground spring. So it wasn't full of silt or anything from the shaking and commotion. The people up there on the hillside were in pretty good shape. Later on that evening, when it was getting dark, I noticed there was a car came up and parked in our little tiny parking lot up there. There's only room for the three of us neighbors up there for our cars. But this other car had pulled in there and was half hanging over the bank. And I went down to, they were just sitting in the car. It was a couple, we knew them, and they lived down near the waterfront. And they had got out of their house, of course, and were looking for someplace on higher ground, and they'd driven up Hope Street and then up into our little parking lot, and I guess they were just going to sit there all night. So I told them to come up in our house, and they did, spent the whole night there, and a couple other people came up and walked up, climbed up there, and we invited them to come in. So did our other neighbors, people come from downtown, low-lying areas, and we come up. It wasn't bad weather, but it was too cool to sit out and outdoors all night.
Some did, though. Still cold.
So
you were lucky you had heat and water. And
yeah, well, you had a little heat, didn't you?
And up on high ground.
Yes.
So did any of your friends get caught up in the earthquake or?
Well, my brother and his wife and his family in Anchorage, of course, they suffered in the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
But their house was not damaged. I think he said that there was a crack that crossed the entire lower floor of his mm-hmm. house, mm-hmm. a concrete floor and concrete walls on the lower level.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a crack, but it never was, it wasn't a major one, and it never caused a leakage or structural problem or anything mm-hmm. like that. And aside from that, they didn't have any damage there. But in Anchorage, there was a great deal of damage. It was spotty. It was one area where everything was pretty well destroyed or very mm-hmm. badly damaged. In other areas, even not too far away, were relatively undamaged. Downtown on 4th Avenue, the north side of the street for about a block and a half stretch, it just collapsed, just sank about, I think about 12 or 14 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You can still see pictures of that every once in a while.
Wow.
The half of the street just collapsed with
gosh.
Cars and stores and the theater and, I don't know, bars. And so the theater marquee, after the building sank, the marquee stuck out in front of it quite a ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was down at the level of the remaining part of the street that didn't mm-hmm. collapse.
Wow.
Things like that. And right across the street, the stores and bars and everything, they remained at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was one area of severe damage. The penny store was fairly new at the time, and the facing collapsed off it. The store was very badly damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other buildings. There was a new apartment building under construction, a big concrete structure, about, I think it was 9th Avenue and H or G or K or somewhere out in that area. By the Park Strip,
mm-hmm.
where the Park Strip is now. And it toppled over. The whole building came down at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called the Four Seasons Apartment, but it wasn't, it was still under construction.
Mm-hmm.
And the McKinley Building, the tallest one in Anchorage at that time, was up there on East 4th Avenue. East 4th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
That was badly damaged and has never been repaired since.
Mm-hmm.
Still stands and still condemned. Then out at Turnagain by the sea, a suburban area between downtown and the airport, but along the bluffs over Kinnick Arm, overlooking mm-hmm. Kinnick Arm, was a very nice residential district, one of the nicer areas, residential areas in Anchorage area, and that suffered terrifically. It just the whole bluff gave way and slid down into the bay, and many homes damaged and destroyed out there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, some of those were among the nicer homes
mm-hmm.
in Alaska.
So after the quake, and tsunami, did you even think of leaving Kodiak, or?
Well, I thought seriously of sending my wife and kids out when we could,
mm-hmm.
when we had transportation again. But then they didn't. They hung in here until the summer when they went out anyway to the place on Whidbey Island. Mm-hmm. She'd always take the kids out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then. We had already made plans to build an addition on our house, quite a large addition, for that house anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the materials coming, we were all committed, and so we thought of canceling that and
mm-hmm.
just walking away from it, or at least not trying to build it in those conditions. But then things started to calm down later on, and so we went ahead with that project too. Because most of the freight facilities were devoted to restoring the town, the downtown, mm-hmm. and the businesses and things.
Yeah, and how long did it take for the during the rebuilding months?
It was a long time. I think the downtown district was where the downtown district is now, the main mall in that area. It was about 1967, mm-hmm. summer of 67, before the new permanent buildings were put up down around the mall area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, this part of the island had sunk. It dropped to about 8 feet or 8.5 feet below what it had been before. So then that meant that every high tide we had, at least the higher high tides, mm-hmm. would come right up into the town, and it came right across the main road. So you mm-hmm. couldn't, if you were on the other side of about where Kraft's door parking lot entrance is mm-hmm. on Rosanna, about that point on out, you couldn't come to this part of town.
Oh, okay.
And vice versa, of course. One during high tide.
Mm-hmm.
And that continued for quite a while until they were able to haul enough fill in to build it up in that low area where, mm-hmm. where the water came in so far. But there were many times when I'd come off the mountain from work and come down the backside of the mountain, park our big trucks over there in Aleutian Homes. And then I get in my car to come home. But if it happened to be a real high tide, I couldn't go home. Okay. Maybe a couple of hours or longer or something.
So you had to get down before high tide.
Yeah. And that continued for a while. They, right after the earthquake, they had to clear out all the trash, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
It's for safety and health reasons, and to just get some kind of traffic flow through the town
mm-hmm.
again. And when they did have a street opened up so you could get from one side of town to the other, then those people that had to go through town had to get a kind of pass.
Mm-hmm.
And there were National Guard and police and so forth would check when I'd go to work. If I was going to work at night and had to go through downtown, I'd show them my little pass down about where KIA is now, the Westmark Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would let me go on through roughly about kind of along Marine Way, that area.
The, mm-hmm.
They had a half of a street pushed clear, and I could drive around there about to where Elks Club is, and then up. And then from there on, it was high enough, and I could go into Aleutian Homes and, or any other part of this part of the
side
town.
Okay.
But the most damaged part, or the most damage, of course, occurred in the downtown district, because that's where the concentration of stores and canneries and things were.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all along the waterfront, canneries and businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then another area that was hard hit was out there, the old Beachcombers, where the Salvation Army is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The old original Beachcombers was a big log building that sat right about where the later Beachcombers was rebuilt. And that was destroyed, and some other homes and things that were along that mm-hmm. low stretch of water. And then some other areas out at the Coast Guard Station. Well, that time it was Navy base.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another area that where some lives were lost in the first tsunami. When the earthquake hit, probably because this part of the island sank 8 feet or so, the water level rose very fast, not violent, not like the tsunami later,
but mm-hmm.
it rose very fast, and it came up high enough that in low-lying areas it dumped trash all over. And out at Kelson Bay, the road used to run from the bottom of that big hill, just this side of Kelson Inn. It turned back on itself and down to the beach, and mm-hmm. followed the beach along. Very low-lying there. And then when this water rose, it put a whole bunch of driftwood on the road.
Okay.
So you couldn't drive across it.
Kind of barricaded the road there.
Yeah, okay. And there's pieces of logs and things laying all over the stretch of road for about maybe a mile or a little more,
mm-hmm.
where it was right along the beach. Then there were some people that were out beyond that on the road system, including two good friends of ours and close neighbors who were drowned there. They had been out at the Sag Shack area. Mm-hmm. They both had the day off because of Good Friday. He was a music teacher at the school and band instructor and so forth, and she worked for the city as a clerk.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had the day off, and they loved to go outdoors and hike and beachcomb mm-hmm. and this and that. So they went out in the morning, and they invited my wife to go with them. And she would have gone too, but she couldn't find a babysitter to come in the morning and stay all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so she didn't go, and was at work. And then, as it happened, they were still out at Passaic when mm-hmm. the earthquake hit. And when that happened, they jumped in their Jeep and headed back to town. And they got as far back as the far side of Kelson Bay. And there were some cars stopped there on a little high area on the east side of the bay.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't go across in that low-lying area. So then the men in the group decided that they would take a couple of vehicles and they would go along and get out and move these things by hand,
mm-hmm.
these logs and things, and open up a route so that they could get the cars through. And so they started doing that, and our friends, Gene and Rose Schultz, Gene was going to go with the men too, and then Rose thought they didn't have any children or anything, and she could drive the Jeep. She mm-hmm. thought she could help by driving one of the vehicles, so she did. But the other women and some children stayed with their cars there
mm-hmm.
to wait for the road to be opened. Then the men got down about halfway along, and there were six men altogether and Rose. And that happened, it was just 33 minutes after the first earthquake, the big one, when the first tsunami hit.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kelson Bay, because of the kind of a funnel shape of the bay,
mm-hmm.
it built up and was very high and violent in there, and it caught them about halfway along, and they couldn't escape it.
Wow.
And so those seven people were killed there. And then there were, I believe, three more killed in the first tsunami at Old Harbor, and then the ones here in town. And I think it was a total of 29 on the island
mm-hmm.
altogether.
Wow.
The ones in town, the seven at Kelson Bay and three at Old Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive about that number, but I think that's what I read in it later.
And this is all from the tsunami, not the earthquake?
Yeah.
Devastating.
One of those might have been a heart attack that same day or that mm-hmm. night or something, and may not have been the tsunami itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure about that. And I believe there were 139 statewide, all over the
country. Oh, wow.
Because it was so sparsely populated. If that had happened in California or Puget Sound, it would have been thousands.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And as violent as the quake was, too.
Well, anyway, you asked Phil if our friends were... If we were separated from them, we were,
mm-hmm.
as far as communications concerned, for some time. Even though our White Owl's communication station up on top of the mountain, the guy that was on duty at the time, he managed to get the power back on. We had an emergency power of our own up there,
mm-hmm.
and he got that going. and got the communication system equipment restored to service. But it didn't do any good because we transmitted and received to and from the next station in the Met, which was at Homer, a place called Diamond Ridge up above mm-hmm. Homer. But of course, it was out of service too, and so was Soldotna, which was the next one on up. And then Anchorage, of course, was wiped out.
Oh, geez.
The facility there, and that was one of the main hubs. King Salmon was still in service, or got restored right away. And all of the rest of the stations around westward and northwest and the north coast in the interior, they weren't affected.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't do much good as far as we were concerned because we couldn't get through the main hub at the Anchorage mm-hmm. for a couple of days. So then it was a day or so, it must have been a day and a half or so, that we were finally able to go to transmit and receive through part of the system,
mm-hmm.
not including Soldotna and Anchorage and all of those in that area. But we were able to talk to ham radio operators in Nome.
Oh.
And I knew one of them. He worked at the White Alice station there, the Anvil Mountain station. And he wanted to know if we wanted to send messages by ham radio operators if it would work.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him a message and told him if he could get hold of my one brother in Redmond or a cousin in Sacramento or an aunt and uncle or cousins or whatever in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
any of those places,
then
or my other brother in
message.
Anchorage, mm-hmm. because he couldn't get to Anchorage either. But and then it happened that he did. He was able to. He spoke to a ham radio operator in, I think it was near San Francisco. And whoever that was, he called my brother in Redmond, long distance from wherever it was, San Francisco mm-hmm. or someplace. and then my brother there, when he got news from us that we were okay, he notified all our other relatives.
Yes.
And friends.
How long did that take after the earthquake?
It seems to me that it was 2 days.
Oh, okay. So they had no idea what was going on?
No, they didn't. But they did find out that it wasn't true that the island had sunk. But then they also heard that there were, you know, much damage and a lot of loss of life.
So so you were able to communicate with your relatives, and that's great. I could just imagine what they were going through, not knowing. So during the rebuilding months, what did you do? You mentioned you worked and you had to have a pass to go through.
Yeah, I continued working. The day after was my scheduled day off,
mm-hmm.
and it was almost impossible for me to get to work anyway that day, so from where I lived. But then the next day, before they got a place, a street open through the rubble and so forth, I wanted to go to work because I knew that they had to have everybody that they could get up there.
Mm-hmm.
So. But to get to the truck that we used to get up and down the mountain, which was over in Aleutian Homes, mm-hmm. I couldn't go through town, and I couldn't even walk through town. It wasn't allowed. So I climbed up on the side of the mountain above our house and made my way through the brush and the grass and the mud and the snow all along the hillside, and then from there dropped down into Aleutian Homes
mm-hmm.
and went to get the truck. Then coming back to the next day, I had to climb up the mountain and go the other way. I
mm-hmm.
did that for several days, several nights.
Wow.
Because I had changed shifts from day shift to night shift at that time. And so I was scrambling along that mountainside in the middle of the night. And then again in the morning when I get off.
Mm-hmm.
But I continued to go to work. And then later I got a pass and could take my car through to the destroyed area, to the truck. And the other people who worked up there lived on this side of the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of them lived in Volusia homes and different places, but they were all on this side of the downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't have that problem, but we had plenty of problems anyway. But then a few days later, we finally got the system restored enough so that we could operate again through Soldotna and Anchorage, mm-hmm. and the other ones in the valley area and the other stations. And we got some communications restored then, mm-hmm. to and from the state. But I just continued working then, and of course every day we'd see a lot of excitement and commotion downtown where they, mm-hmm. were trying to get things cleared away and then start filling in because of the island recession of 8 feet or whatever it was. Before they could do anything else, they had to raise the level.
Oh, okay.
Somehow. So they started, as soon as they could, they started hauling in rock fill.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole area where the mall is and the whole downtown district had to be refilled to make up for that 8-foot drop.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yes, as high as its roof.
Golly.
And that was on average down there. Some places, mm-hmm. was less, some more. So then they hauled in, on average, a 12-foot layer of fill to, mm-hmm. bring it up safely above high tide level.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Later they rebuilt the Boat Harbor breakwaters, mm-hmm. Same locations and same position and everything, but much bigger,
mm-hmm.
much more skookum breakwaters than they had been before. But the opening of the small boat harbor is the same place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how did they get all the materials they needed? You said they that took up most of the freight.
Yes, there were a lot of emergency measures put into effect to get, first of all, food and things like that into town. Although there never was a real emergency as far as, mm-hmm. food is concerned. But for quite a while there was little or no fresh produce or milk,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. But as soon as they could, they brought in what was needed in that way. And then later on, of course, they started bringing in all kinds of rebuilding materials. And some contractors came from other parts of the state and got a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. So was there governmental aid?
Yes, in a number of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
One of the important ones for this town was SBA loans at very low interest. I think it was 3% interest.
And what is that, SBA?
Small Business Association or, okay. Small Business Authority or something like that.
Okay.
And they made the money available, loans at very low interest for the businessmen who had suffered damage and wanted to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them did. Took advantage of that. Got cheap money and rebuilt their stores eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, that took a while, 2 or 3 years to rebuild permanently. But the Blankenberg Jewelry and Hardinger's, Norman's, several of the bars, Mecca Bar, Tony's, Sally's, Rodinger's Drugstore, a lot of businesses down there. A couple of banks and Yelps and lodges were built during that time too, although I'm not sure that they got SBA money. I think they got a loan through the Yelps National Organization.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive about that either.
So was anybody covered with insurance or Was it required?
Not that I know
then?
Of, but there may have been very few that had some kind of earthquake mm-hmm. or tsunami insurance, but it seems to me that what we heard around town was that such a thing was almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was available in those days, but very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm. It's not like now where it's required to have insurance on everything.
Yeah, well, people have insurance for the usual things, you know, storm damage, wind damage, mm-hmm. fire, and things like that. But to this day, I bet there's nobody has, or very few people have insurance against earthquake
mm-hmm.
Or tsunamis. I don't know if there is such a thing. Maybe it's covered by flood insurance, but I don't think anybody has mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, I think they must be paying through the nose for it.
Yeah, I could just imagine. So how did people feel after the disaster? Did they, Kodiak seems to always pull together all the people here. Was it like that back then?
Yes, very much so. Let's see, I don't know if I can remember specific incidents, but I do know that people who had food or something that they thought somebody else needed made it available.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, some of the people were on our hillside who were without power for several days. They began to lose what they had stored in the
mm-hmm.
freezers. We didn't. We lucked out that way. Of course, we didn't open the freezer during that time
mm-hmm.
either, because we knew that we might be without for a while. But the people were very helpful that way with their neighbors or making supplies and things that available to others that might need them through the emergency
mm-hmm.
system. There were some people staying in the old high school for a few nights or maybe longer, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And people in town made bedding and food and all kinds of things available to them. Help furnish care for kids who parents had to go rebuild or work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a lot of mutual help and so forth
mm-hmm.
among the citizens. And then, like I say, there was emergency help too from federal and state government.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. How about the schools? Did school close down for a while? Or?
I can't remember. I'm sure it was closed for a while, but I don't remember how long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your kids were too young for
yeah,
school, right?
Yeah, they were preschool.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure about that. And my wife, that was before she started working for the school district.
Mm-hmm.
So. But it had to have been closed for a while because, well, you couldn't even get to it
mm-hmm.
anywhere. It was right downtown.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of got demolished also?
No, it wasn't demolished. It sat high enough so it wasn't damaged, but
mm-hmm.
but
just to get to it was yeah, just to get to it was probably hard. How about mail and stuff like that? Did you guys continue to receive your mail? And
I can't remember too much about that either, but it's that too took a while, but I don't remember how long.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a newspaper? Was it a Daily Mirror?
Yes. We had it wasn't daily in those days. And then, of course, what they had was wiped out. We didn't
mm-hmm.
have any newspaper for a while, but they, very soon after the disaster, the publisher at that time got out a we called it an emergency newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't put them out every day, but he made them available in the stores as they began opening, and then the post office when it was working again. And you could pick one up. I don't remember that they were delivered. They may have been.
Mm-hmm.
They may have had newsboys deliver them instead of the
mm-hmm.
paper. But in any case, we still have a number of those.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking through them not long ago, and I didn't have the entire series, but I had from number 1 to number 27 with a few gaps in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting to read just a one-page, sometimes two-page flyer,
mm-hmm.
with notes of, oh, well, for instance, they put a notice in there that tetanus and typhoid shots were available at certain times, and you should, anybody that wanted one, which included all children and other people who hadn't had them for a while,
mm-hmm.
should get them at a certain time and certain place. And different notices and messages that were, that you'd find in a newspaper if there was
mm-hmm.
one. But it was a very abbreviated
right. one. Just the facts.
Yeah.
So did they have any aid come in as far as nursing or any hospital aid for those injured, or were there many injured?
I don't remember that we had a lot of injuries because of this. There were some deaths from, like I told you about,
mm-hmm.
but and there probably were some injuries, but I don't know that there was any concerted effort to bring in extra nurses and doctors. There may have been a few came on a temporary basis
mm-hmm.
To help out and to cover, but I don't remember that was a real big thing here.
Mm-hmm.
I think in some places they might have had a more urgent need for that kind of help than we had
mm-hmm.
here.
Okay. Let's see what else. Am I missing anything? I know there's probably more questions I want to ask, and I can't think of it right now. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Hmm.